Are you ready?
No, wait.
Bad news, good news, good news, bad news. My furnace went out this morning.
Oh, no.
Good news, it's fixed.
Oh, good. Right.
Good news, it's still under warranty.
Oh, boy.
$1,000 richer. Bad news, I spent the time I would have, some of the time I would have had to look up details with this guy looking over his shoulder, making sure he didn't mess up. So I'm a little frazzled, but I'll get here.
Here.
Where did
they
come
from
last
night?
Was it really?
Oh, my God.
Not under warranty.
Oh, now what's wrong, you know?
They had to replace the whole motor.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
That's right.
I was supposed to, because my air conditioning is leaking free, so I was going to get a whole new unit by praying, and that's why I put in all this money from here. Anyway.
That's like $2,000 or $3,000 probably.
The motor, no.
No.
Well,
oh, I see. Mine would have been $1,000 if it was under warranty. Somebody's making money, because those circuit boards and motherboards like this, and it's one-tenth the price of them. Anyway, welcome back, everybody.
I'm not
going to
risk any coffee here.
Oh, okay. Because we will, I want to show a picture from there eventually. Quick review. Piano lesson, boring, but we have to do it.
Oh, I knew it was so bad.
Didn't you? I just noticed how much energy it takes to prepare, and it just took a lot of energy to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think we do see some really important things. So just a quick review. Two schools, physics and psychology, that can't get together. Hornweg 2 was von Franz's address. The master's voice comes on the scene like a ship's captain. And that does introduce a kind of ambiguity, because we hear about the master, we hear about the captain. But I think you can imagine that basically the act of imagination is about the master and what he's asking of Pali. Why it gets confusing between the master and the captain is that you could say what should be a master in Pali is really a captain. That is to say, this voice of Mercurius has been stripped of its real power, and it serves as almost a substitute for the real thing. We'll see more of that, but just to touch the main points. He goes, and then the little detail which I felt was important, that the master has paper bags, suggesting that this is going to be more of just Pali's paper. So we had the dream earlier of dancing and producing forms of paper. he's taken back to Vienna in 1913, which suggests that his personal version of this issue goes back to his 13th year. Remember, he was born in 1900. And indeed, it surfaced how he has had dreams of Mach, where one would expect in the Jewish legend to have dreams of Elijah as the inner soul figure. So that he threw out his Jewish mysticism and replaced it with science. The master says captain, and then we get into this bit of the captain from Vienna, the captain from Capernaum, the captain, the basic story is from Luke, was it Luke? I forget exactly where it was from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from Luke, where a Roman soldier, a Roman officer approaches Jesus and, asks him for help, and Jesus offers to go cure his sick servant, and the centurion says, "I'm not worthy to have you enter my house. Just say the word, and the servant will be cured." What Paul and the author made of that was that it's a physical illness that's being cured. Pali then reports that the way it was taught to him and the way it's used in Catholicism is that quote is used at the Mass, but it's my soul will be healed, so that they are excluding the body in their pronouncement. And Pali felt that was a detriment to him. In the act of imagination, it's neither a soul or a servant, it's the man's daughter, the captain's from Vienna's daughter, and he doesn't ask for the woman to be healed, suggesting again the beginning of the end in Pali's situation. The lady does mention that Freud was her advocate, suggesting that the way she makes her entry is through instinct. And Freud may have missed the spiritual part of instinct, but at least he stressed the importance of instinct. Then he talks about the censors who are professors who don't want to deal with her, and also then brings in the captain from Köpernick, who is again going back to the captain theme, and that captain was a charlatan who, actually he was not a captain, he donned military clothing to, I guess, wheedle his way into a pension. It was a true story in the newspapers. And so Pali was just picking that up. Again, where there should be mercury, there's this dishonest, manipulative captain. So you can say the captain of Pali's soul isn't the stranger or isn't the master. It's the manipulative power drive, which of course precludes intimacy because love and power are opposites. There was a reference to the red slaves, which I questioned. There was a reference to the black theologians, all in Pali's mind being emblems of the repressive figure. But if you look behind those images, the red slaves in alchemy, they're sulfur, and the black theologian in a dream that Pali must have known and must have been referring to, that black theologian is actually the good theologian, but he's black because he's dealing with unacceptable desires. So we start getting all sorts of confusing and conflicting statements. The one thing I thought was really true, and I think is really behind the whole piano lesson, is the master wants to reassert himself at all costs. And we have to remember that, because we'll see how at the end Pali just funks the whole thing, and it's so tragic to hear him say the right thing one minute, and then the next minute it's like that never happened. The theme of the black and white keys, musical keys, came up, suggesting that light melodies can come out of dark notes, so that Pali's beginning to see the the complicated nature of morality, or the contradictory nature of reality, or the unexpected nature of reality, that sometimes dark-looking experiences can really hold keys to our life's path. And, of course, specifically that would refer to his relationship to von Franz. He's trying to come to grips with his feeling of guilt for her, and he keeps judging it in a conventional right and wrong sense. Then, at that moment, the piano teacher turns into an Oriental woman. Probably because the Orient has this different take on, or opposite take, to right is right and wrong is wrong. Inside the yin there's a yang, inside the yang there's a yin. I forget what it's called. You know the figure I'm talking about. A detail which we'll be making more of. Then he sees to the north, he sees that newspapers are being distributed, which was, I felt, would suggest very literally that he is to write, and the north having to do in his mind with intuition and the future, that his writing was to really address the future, but he doesn't even read the papers. He says that the people's reading the paper gives them their identity, but he doesn't read it, so he's not going to get his identity. In other words, his identity was to be was to be rooted in his writing on this issue, his talking about this issue of a stranger. That's what would have made Pali who he was supposed to be. And that will come up later because he doesn't have a passport. Passport would be that identity, which he is forsaking by neglecting to write on what he has been, in a sense, commanded to write. We ended with the strangers and the message which they need to hear, that quantum physics thinks chance rules, but Pali is at some level aware there is something else going on in events besides chance. We'll pick up with that today, that chance bit. Questions? That all sound familiar, hopefully? It's hard stuff, I know. Tedious.
Did you mean to say that my statement that there's something going on besides cause and effect, or did you mean to say
besides chance? The science would say that quantum physics would say that the movement in the atom of the electron is based on chance.
What they phrase as probabilities.
Probability. And then extrapolating from that as a metaphor, they're inclined to see greater patterns in life as merely chance. And what Pali goes to then is evolution. That, you know, for Darwin, it's just chance. There's no purposive intelligence behind the evolution of our species. Okay?
I didn't know that. That Darwin felt there was no purposive.
Right.
I thought the evolution was to make animal whatever handle the earth better.
Well, that's
survive better.
That's interesting. I just had that thought last night, believe it or not. No, I think what he's really saying is that what has determined our existence is the accidental occurrence of the form that survived. So a whole pile of different forms at any stage of the evolutionary process will emerge, but the one that survives is the one that remains is the one that survives. But, you know, I think you touched on something that's really important. He doesn't explain why does life care whether it survives. He doesn't really answer that. And that's a given assumption, that life wants to survive. But why? Why is that self-evident?
Instinct?
Well, but, I mean, you start just giving words, and you say, well, then why instinct?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll stop.
Yeah. But this whole larger issue, which we're going to come to just in about 10 minutes, so it's worth looking at. Synchronicity is a chance event. But a meaningful chance event. I wish I should have brought in the video I have of Jung talking about this. I could probably repeat it. It's in that Houston interviews that we were talking about. He says, he's asked, you know, what synchronicity is as well. Let's suppose I'm talking about a red car, and we're sitting in a cafe, and a red car turns the corner. That's just chance. Of course, he's using a very simple example. He said we can't say it that my talking about the red car caused it to be there. That would be superstition. And you can't say that it was a miracle, because that's theism, which he rejects. So he says, we say it's chance. But then, with that twinkle in his eye, he says, but these chance events happen more often than chance allows. I love it. So, as soon as you mention the word synchronicity, you are expressing in that word a conflict of two incompatible presuppositions, that it is not caused, but that it's happening more often than cause allows. So there's something else going on, but we don't know what that is.
Earlier, I thought you were saying that synchronicity usually starts, the inner process, like a dream. Are we saying that it's a broader thing then?
Yeah. But also, again, a contradiction is that it looks like when people are at certain points in their psychological journey, they seem to occur. It doesn't make sense. I know it doesn't make sense. But that doesn't stop Jung from saying it's a valid phenomenon. So what Pauli is struck with is, then how do we explain this? And, you know, and in that, to that extent, he's a scientist. How do we explain this? And he doesn't know. Chance allows. Chance allows. Yeah, statistically.
And then the contradiction is then...
Well, that it's chance, which is random, yet it seems to possess a certain order. If you look at your life, if you've really taken synchronicity seriously, and you've looked at your life, how your life has changed its direction towards a feeling that life's more meaningful, you have to admit that this chance is more than chance. And yet, as soon as you try to systematize it, you've lost it. Kind of like trying to pin down the movement of the electron. As soon as you pin it down, you've lost it. Up to this point. Now, what Pauli's going to do, and I'm anticipating now where we're going, the Lectures to the Strangers, which I think is complete rubbish, is his attempt to try to understand the non-chance aspect of chance in synchronicity. He became fascinated by this biologist. I don't know the guy's name, Delbruck. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
He was, did early work on the structure of proteins.
He could very well have. Yeah. Could very well have. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He was a nuclear physicist.
Yeah. Well, he used an X-ray to...
But he went over to biology.
Yeah, right.
And what interested Pauli is, if we study evolution, and which can be done, you know, in a controlled way with these fastly reproducing organisms, not at the human level, but at the microscopic level, and we watch them mutate internally and self-select, they, like our life, do show a pattern. These cells evolve over time in the laboratory in a meaningful way towards a higher order of organism. I think that's pretty standard. So he came to the States to talk with Delbruck about Delbruck's research and how Delbruck might have seen mathematical patterns in what looks like random chain, well, I shouldn't say chains, random evolutions at in small organisms, to see if he could get any insight into the non-random aspect of chance. which is not a bad idea. The problem is that Pauli didn't want to look at the meaning of chance in his own life, namely the presence of Marie-Louise von Franz. So it would have been one thing if he had accepted his relationship to von Franz and then went off to study probability. But she felt, and I think we'll see in the act of imagination and her response to it, that he did that instead of experiencing synchronicity in his own life emotionally. He went off to the States to investigate it intellectually. So, in a sense, trying to satisfy his curiosity for synchronicity, which should have been satisfied, first of all, by accepting her presence, and then avoiding that issue by this intellectual research.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In the play of the captain and the master.
Yeah.
Does that have at all to do, seem at all to do with the shadow?
With what?
The work of the shadow.
I think you could say in that.
This is what I'm thinking about the captain.
Yeah, right. That in the place of the self, Pauli has put the shadow. So that the master would be the self, and the captain would be the shadow. But where it's confusing, he uses the word captain in a couple of different ways in a couple of different places. So captain would be like the captain from Kupernik. That captain.
What I was wondering also, I guess, in terms of when you're working with patients, do you actually see that when people get to that level of dealing with the shatter, that the shatter can be an interference, or like
no can about it?
A sensor.
Oh, absolutely. This is the battle everyone faces. Yeah. So, and that to that extent, this material is worthwhile, even though it's frustrating, because anybody who comes at this point faces this battle. Am I gonna take the path that gets me the most money, the most sex, the most attention, the most satisfaction to my vanity? Or am I going to take the path that's meant for me?
And so, can you define what the function of the shadow is in that case?
Well, it's power.
Power?
Mm-hmm.
So it's on the side of power.
It's on the side of power.
Does it have any good qualities?
It can, but not when it operates unconsciously.
Oh, I see.
We were talking about, in my Spanish class, we were talking about this. Our teacher keeps saying, well, same to me too, but I think to those younger people. You got to learn to think outside the box. You got to learn to think outside the box when we interpret something. And one of the girls said, but you know, it's warmer inside the box. That was really pretty profound. And that's what Pauli can't give up, the warmth inside the box.
So the master is somewhat allied to the self, what are you saying?
I'd say the master is largely an image of the self.
Yeah. Who's struggling to have some power.
He's struggling to have his point of view communicated, that science has to take another step, Pauli has to take another step, and that spirit and matter has been wrongly separated as two separate things. Yeah, that's the crux of it, Tom.
The opposites came up for me in that context were, I mean, you got the captain from Vienna, I thought, well, that would be the Freudian take, and Jung would be the master. And Jung was trying to work with him to try to get him to understand this broader concept. And it still is a pairing of opposites, but it was also a little bit more personalized.
Yeah. Well, I think you could say he projected the master onto Jung.
Yeah.
And on the von Franz, for that matter.
Well,
in a way.
Yeah.
Technically, it's not possible, but I mean, we generally say you project onto your same sex, but so you project a masculine figure onto a masculine figure and a feminine figure onto a feminine. But since the master and the piano teacher are so allied, that it's really, he's projecting the piano teacher onto von Franz, but she's on the side of the master anyway.
Yeah, he's kind of like an anima.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the anima, you see, works for the self. The anima works for the self if things are going right. In other words, she makes your sexual attractions purposive to communicate to you where your life should go. Basic Jung position.
Genesis, and as you recapped
that,
then she all of a sudden takes on the Asian look.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, we talked about that as complicated. But for starters, the equivalence of good and evil in her mind. You can't say, oh, this is good and this is bad. And that's certainly that's the great Christian error. I think I've told somebody the story about the first guy I worked with in California, who was a quasi-Freudian, a really nice guy, and had been a preacher. He came in, somebody slipped $500 under his door. I'll tell you that story. Somebody slipped $500. He told me this story because he was working on the same issue on himself. Somebody, when he was a young preacher, slipped $500 under his door. And this was like 1970, so $500 would be like $5,000 today. That was a lot of money then. Slipped $500 under his door. He decided he didn't need the money. So he knew a young couple, and he slipped that $500 under their door, young couple in the parish. What could be nicer? So they got divorced, arguing about how to spend that money.
Oh, no.
See what I mean? That's what the Oriental woman understands. Don't always do good, because it can have very negative consequences. And if you're in a bad situation, it may not be. It may be that it's leading you to a positive. And that's, I think, what she understands. But we're trained to do good. You know, and highly destructive, huh? Yeah, right.
So in the Orient, if you're not wanting to do good, what are you wanting to be? What's the mindset?
I really don't know.
Follow the path of down.
Follow the path of down. Thank you.
Of what? Of your path.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
This is not to say go out and be a criminal, but don't be so naive to think everything that you intend as good is good. Don't be so naive as to think everything that looks good is good. And vice versa. I don't think anyone's saying give up your ethical stance, but...
Well, isn't our closest saying that the word to hell
is... Yeah, that's the idea.
So that, you know, it really is a matter of saying our motives.
Yeah. And of course, now back to Pali, is he feels he's doing something very bad in this relationship with von Franz. And his wife must have been furious because, you know, none of von Franz's letters survived. She burnt them all. So she was not happy. And yet, what we would have if they had been able to deal with this, you know. Okay, that the last time I think we finished at 129. Remember, we're flipping back and forth between the text and the interpretation. 129 for the text and 146 for the interpretation. I know we did the last this paragraph, but let me just read it to prime the pump. Second paragraph on 129. The censors believe nowadays that chance rules the world. I mean, the best of the censors. By the way, why do you play tricks on the gentlemen in France and other places? I know that you were the one who gave them these phantasms of mosquito parameters, as I call them, which nobody can catch, and with and which actually multiply when you try to catch them. All this is disturbing for the best and most reasonable people, since the victims of these practical jokes believe again that the world is like clockwork, which runs down automatically. You are playing a dangerous game. I know that in this case you have acted on your own, not by order of the master. So that's just the chance issue. This mosquito parameters thing, I'm not really familiar with it, but apparently there was a group of physicists in France who were unable to accept quantum's interpretation of the chance movement of the electron and tried to come up with some causal explanation. And mosquito parameters would be some of their factors or theories.
Does the animal really operate independently of the self?
No, I don't see, I don't believe, next thing I was going to say, I don't believe that's true, that she instigated it. So a little bit to Ted's question, when the shadow is unconscious, it infects these other archetypes. So it's not her that's saying that, it's her contaminated with the shadow that he won't recognize. So, you know, you look at these dream figures and they look like they are leading you astray. I think sometimes they do, but often they are lodged with the part of your shadow you don't know, with the power of your own ego, the power complex you don't know, and they're operating in that way.
So, I mean, that when you say the animus and the shadow are married.
That's the marriage of the animus and shadow. I was just supervising the therapist recently, and the case she was presented to me was a woman who keeps getting into these horrible relationships, and the dream the woman had when she met this new opportunity was a man coming on the scene and saying, you are now taking care of yourself. But that's not true. She is about to step into one more destructive relationship, but the animus is saying to her, you are taking care of yourself, because it's infected with her shadow. The animus should be saying, stay away from that guy. But instead, that voice is leading her into the same kind of destructive relationship again and again. So that's, I think that's what's going on here with the piano teacher. He's not taking responsibility for his own shadow, you could say, and then he's blaming her for it.
So until we clearly separate out those and
yes.
divorce them, so
like right.
separate out.
You can't trust them.
One will color the other.
Absolutely.
Is that what dark anima is?
Could be, but not necessarily. And I don't think you ever really get it separated. You have to scrutinize every dream. I would not trust any dream on the face of it. That's kind of what we do in our individual work, is help people see what figures are trustworthy and what figures are not trustworthy. And believe me, sometimes when you tell somebody that an untrustworthy figure that appears trustworthy is untrustworthy, all hell breaks loose. They get furious. It becomes quite an emotional event. So she then says, yes, I did, but I don't believe it. And then she says, I have always liked children very much. A little bit more than halfway down the page. But precisely because I like children, I had to take the risk of playing this game with the phantasms. I don't believe that either, as you call them. You don't need these images, neither do you. Don't heed the. I think that should be heed.
Yeah.
I said you don't need, but it should be you don't heed. See where it says she, third line down, don't need should be don't heed. The important sentence is that their concept of mathematical probability is that which remains when one is totally ignorant of our piano playing.
Where are you now?
About halfway down, a little bit more than halfway down the page, where it says she quieted.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then the italics.
At the bottom of that paragraph, I thought that was that last sentence was kind of mysterious. But
doesn't it change when it gets warm?
Yeah.
No, that's, in other words, when your erotic fire is touched, that's when this material becomes important.
Oh.
Again, Pali thinks he can investigate synchronicity objectively. But she's saying, no, it changes when it gets warm.
Could we say any kind of eros matter?
Yes. I'd say any sort of emotional state. Any sort of activated emotional state would be that work.
Well, would you agree with that?
Well, I've been saying for the last 10 years.
Okay. That's what I was saying. I just want to be sure that he's not making some of this.
No, it's absolutely right.
Understand.
That's the essence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that's true, you see. There you got to separate wheat from chaff.
The sentence was I intentionally create unrest because people try to understand the world without piano music. Well, two parts there, but I intentionally create unrest.
That may be true.
I that feels true to me. I mean,
yeah.
Based on what my honest has done, it's created some unrest. But
yeah.
Because people try to understand the world without piano music, does that mean piano music, in essence, you don't understand the relativity of good and bad?
No, I think she's speaking to Pauly that he's trying to understand synchronicity. He's trying to understand chance as a theoretical concept, not as an experience in his own life.
Oh, okay.
So to understand, to see that it changes when it gets warm would mean for him to realize, yeah, I'm interested in synchronicity as a theoretical project for research, but there's another level, which is the first one I have to deal with if I'm going to be a whole person and pursue this interest.
Get personal.
Pardon?
Don't get personal.
Right. How can I investigate this without getting personal? And she's saying no, because the whole experience of synchronicity is rooted in where you are affectively, where you are emotionally. That's where you see its meaning.
Metaphor of piano music means that emotional affective
right.
Synchronistic domain.
The emotional level of chance. Now comes trouble. I answered mindfully. Chance is always fluctuating, but sometimes it does so systematically. He can't let chance be chance. He's trying to find an order so he can control it. Again, it may be true theoretically, but this is his way to keep chance from having a power over him. And so that's why he goes to America to investigate the systematic dimension of chance.
Yeah.
And you know, as I said, when you when you look back on your life, you can see that synchronicity has led you to a pattern. But each time it occurs, it feels like a breach of all order. So to say it's synchronicity, to say it's systematic, it's only systematic in hindsight. It's never systematic in the moment, which is what he's trying to get it to be. Yeah.
What I'm trying to figure out, too, is it seems like this active imagination has much more of a shadow in it than his dreams do. Is that the danger of doing active imagination?
Well, Bonfranc didn't even think it was an active imagination.
Okay. So okay.
He thought it was far too conscious.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I was wondering.
It's not a genuine active imagination.
Okay.
No, it's not. No.
How do you make it?
There's too much thinking in it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're working with a person with a presented that material, would that be useful to you?
You know, if I read something like this, my heart would sink. Oh my God, what do we do now? Because if you say to them, this is bullshit, they'll walk out. If you accept it, they stay stuck. It's a lose-lose setup. And she said to him, this is bullshit. And he cut off the relationship.
And I think it's a bigger lose-lose because he feels like this is, powerful for him.
Right,
And he's accrediting it to some messenger.
Right.
And it's really him.
Right. And it's really his shadow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's got everything he did with.
You're right. Right. Yeah, I'm sure that's what he thought when he handed her this. He was doing her a great favor by sharing his magnificence.
It seems to be very transparent. I mean, we talked about what is active imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he has control of it all the way
through. Right. I mean, here and there you can feel there's genuine stuff. But largely, it's control. And I think this, you know, this was for her the straw. After all the time she's been with him. Well, then comes the lecture to the strangers, which I'm going to skip over because it's just hot air. And what all it is him trying to, as I said, see the systematic dimension of chance by looking at the patterns that might evolve in evolutionary studies in the laboratory. But again, he's just heard about the importance of warmth, and then he goes on in an abstract presentation.
But on the other hand, I thought I read in that word, and you are right, it's still thinking, maybe too much. But isn't he trying to take, he says it in somewhere, this mathematical quantum, he wants to help take this mathematical quantum theory and evolve it into human kind of psychology.
Right.
I'm wondering if that unfortunately will entail some kind of a little bit of some stage intermediate between dreams and consciousness.
Yeah,
conscious
I think problem. It will, and I think that was his task to work that out, but the point we come back to the point that he was to experience this personally before trying to discuss it theoretically.
Yeah.
And that was his downfall, his tragic flaw, you might say. I think it's what killed him.
So when you look at synchronicity from the perspective of acausal orderedness,
mm-hmm.
then is that a sort of idea of a systemization,
yeah.
of ordering?
Yeah.
And that's what he's trying to comment on.
Right.
Is the acausal orderedness aspect as opposed to an act of creation in
right,
time.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Right.
But nonetheless, that doesn't really help him get where he needs to go.
Yeah, and he is opening himself to that act of creation in time, which would have been the precondition for him drawing the parallel between synchronicity in science and synchronicity in psychology.
To experience it, because he has to experience it first.
Right. Okay. Right. And I think that was what the strangers, those people in the north, so to speak, were waiting to hear. It was what we're all waiting to hear. How does this work? And he just goes to one side of it. And it is true, there is an orderedness. But he tries to discuss that orderedness theoretically before experiencing it personally. And I think even further, to express it theoretically instead of experiencing it personally. And that's the tragedy. In and of itself, it's not a bad idea. But I think the other thing which I mentioned too to keep in mind is every synchronicity blows apart, not every, but I mean these large changes in your life generally blow apart your previous system of adaptation in a way you could never anticipate. If you could anticipate it, it wouldn't be a synchronicity. So to look for the system in the thing is to try to control it before it happens. And no matter how much you understand the systematic dimension of synchronicity, your next one will always upset your previous system. And that's what he doesn't like either.
Did anybody ever take him with these pages and point out all his errors?
No. He wouldn't have listened.
Errors of his way.
He wouldn't have listened.
So they stick out so much.
Yeah, he wouldn't have listened. As we'll see, after this, he broke off his relationship with Von Franz.
And she with him?
She tried to keep it up, but he wouldn't respond.
And they have had defensive fathers. One thing I was reading recently, and I mentioned to you that I've been trying to understand some higher mathematics more. One of the things that does, and he was really a mathematician of first rank, one of the things that you do get into that I was talking to my son about it, he was kind of theoretical, but those people actually, in their mathematical work, get into some pretty far out concepts. Mm-hmm. And one thing I was just reading, I knew it, but I just forgot. The quantum theory uses functions of imaginary numbers.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Are you going to talk about it?
Yeah.
And that's built right in, and the people who developed this imaginary mathematics is way out there.
But we'll talk about that by the end of this.
So
hold that.
His thought that maybe the mathematical aspect, it's not totally
on. No, it's not. It's and I don't think anything he says is totally off. It's that he doesn't deal with it in his own experience.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's the tragedy. And because we're talking about linking psychology and physics, and yet he wants to pursue synchronicity, this link between psychology and physics, only from the physical point of view.
Right.
And as she says, it changes when it gets warmer. Then you'd really do work. And I think he knew about it to some extent, but he couldn't stomach the thought that fate had given him the woman he needed to move forward. That's where he stumbled. Which, Linda, I think, mentioned it a couple of meetings ago. It is really ironic that He stood against the scientific world when he created quantum physics. He stood against the scientific world when he condemned the bomb. But he couldn't do it here. It's strange.
The power of the sensor.
I guess, but it didn't stop him from turning over Newton. Or turning over, he condemned the bomb.
This was a whole new territory.
Because of the feminine experience. Maybe
unless he thought, I don't know if it's in here somewhere, that far out mathematics, when you get into imaginary numbers and stuff like that, that might actually breach that chasm in itself. I don't know if he thought that.
I think he probably did think that.
He says that.
Yeah, I think he does. He did think that. But it won't. Takes us over to 132. I just skipped the Lecture of the Strangers. I don't think you want to get through that, do you?
What page?
To 132. All he does is talk about what I just said, that there is a higher order in chance.
Where do we stand today? We stand at... Are we still in neo-Darwinism, as he describes it here? And as far as the...
I really don't know. It would be nice to have a biologist who would give us an update. I think...
A neo-Darwinism means...
As described on 131, second paragraph, this theory assumes...
Go ahead, Carol. Where is it?
That the second paragraph or the first whole paragraph at the bottom.
Yeah. At the bottom?
At the bottom of that paragraph. This theory... Assumes that biological evolution is caused exclusively by small mutational steps produced by pure chance, from which the external environmental conditions of the species make a so-called natural selection.
That's not Neo-Darwin.
That's Darwin.
Well,
it's his point of view.
They've made
enormous progress.
And
it's called
Neo-Darwin.
This theory
assumes. Yeah, as he says, it's called
Neo-Darwin. Well, maybe Neo now isn't different.
Could be. What I understood was the catch is that these changes don't occur gradually. And the phrase, I believe, is called punctuated equilibrium. Where Darwin would say a trait should emerge slowly over time. In fact, a particular trait in a species will stay the same and then jump. And stay the same, and then jump. It doesn't, like say, if you were developing a hand, the wing doesn't slowly turn into a hand. It does so
in leaps.
In leaps, right.
And that's what Jung means when he says that evolution defies the second law of thermodynamics.
I think
where
so.
A system should be in entropy and gradually run out of energy.
I think so.
Instead, it's seems to be becoming more complex and building on itself.
Probably.
Okay.
I almost failed thermodynamics.
What you call it? Look how the human being grows in growth spurts.
Yeah.
Like a child. It doesn't grow like boom, 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 boom. It grows like this, and then,
right.
And then
yeah.
Like that.
Same idea, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing is they can show mutation or evolutionary changes that don't increase the species' chance of survival. I think they're the two contradictory pieces of data that go against Darwin's exact formulation. They're not throwing it out, but they're saying it's a little bit more complicated.
Well, my family siblings have no wisdom teeth, and there's a permanent baby teeth. Now, if that were to go on, it would happen with our kids, too. But my husband had all the other, so they don't have that same thing. Isn't that sort of the evolution?
Yeah, right. Now, let's say they don't have wisdom teeth, you say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's suppose we were monkeys and we were eating nuts that needed those wisdom teeth to crack them. Darwin would say over time, your line would die out. Mm. Because the people who could eat nuts with wisdom teeth would survive. Would be stronger, healthier, they would beat up, and so on, beat up the weak ones.
But being further advanced, we know how to grind our nuts.
Right, which is a whole other issue, what role culture has in this. But I think, yeah, I'm not on my lake here. I don't know the full ramifications. But what Pally was interested in was getting to these microbes to see if there were patterns of their evolution. And could one find statistical laws in the way they developed spontaneously, apparently haphazardly. I don't know whether he ever succeeded or not. I don't know. As I said, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just it was done as a substitute.
Can I know a little dangerous here, but I know there's been a lot written about this lately about Darwinism.
Yeah.
And one of the things is that idea of the thousands of monkeys, where, you know, they talk about the cleaning up the
potato, I think it was.
Well, and that what happened was that when the species began to develop on another island, they just automatically did it.
Yeah.
And there was no relation between the two, so people began to look at more as an energy
yeah.
in the species and an actual physical transformation mm-hmm. was going on. So then they began to talk about it really isn't the survival of the fittest, there's something else here
yeah.
at work.
Right.
But it's not related to just capacity for scientific experiments on
right.
a particular species in a contained environment.
Right.
That's all I can remember about it. It's just fascinating because it's more of an energetic
development. Yeah. And of course, even some biologists would want to include Jung's idea of synchronicity here, that somehow there is a synchronistic factor playing a role in the evolution so that it becomes more than natural selection. I don't know. But in any case, for Pally, the issue is all of these are interesting questions and important questions, but it went to them instead of his feelings. Do we have a stretch?
Yeah.